Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello and welcome. You've tuned into a conversation among artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guests. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Well, hello once again, and welcome. About an hour north of, hour and a half north of Davenport is that wonderful town of Dubuque, Iowa. And Dubuque has started a film festival, and also they have something marvelous called the Voices from the Warehouse. They gather tons of artists. They have a great show. It's going to go on from September 6th until October 4th, almost a month. Many different venues, many different artists, not only from Dubuque, from the area. And here to talk about it is the founder of the Voices from the Warehouse in Dubuque, Gene Tully, and also one of the artists, Heidi Draley McFall. And Gene and Heidi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you. Gene, let's start off. This is, I think, the third or maybe fourth time that you've come down and talked about this Voices from the Warehouse. It's always been a different crew, always very interesting. John Donovan set this up many years ago. So tell us about Dubuque, and why is it happening in Dubuque, and what is going on?
Well, Bruce, I've always wanted to say this, that it's nice to be back. When you hear people say that, it sounds like you're familiar, you know, you've been there before, so it's nice to be back in the studios, and thank you so much. Dubuque's art community is pretty amazing these days. It's a great place to live. Putting on this show for the last 10 years, you see the genesis of the art community growing and sharing and splitting off and creating their own gigs and people really standing up. So it's an awesome place to live. I don't know if it's all the art there, but I think art has a great influence on the identity and the energy of a city. A lot of people come in from out of town to go to the show, or they'd be wandering past the warehouse looking around in the newly renovated district down there where we have our 15,000 square foot gallery. And people will without prompt say, what's going on here? There's a feeling, there's an energy here. And I just kind of say, well, maybe it's just like Sedona. There's like maybe an energy vortex here. Who knows? All we can do is you know, just thrive on that energy and do the best we can creatively and socially.
Good for you. Good for you. So how did the Voices start? Where did that come from?
Voices from the Warehouse District started up 10 years ago now. And it was just as I was kind of emerging as an artist, and I was coming back from a trip, and you know, driving your car, you're thinking, oh, these great ideas, I got to get back and manifest these ideas. So my friend Timothy McNamara of the Womack Property Company in Dubuque had an abandoned warehouse, 30,000 square feet, second floor, nothing there but a whole bunch of fairly dead golf carts. So I went up there and I proposed to Tim, and I said, you know, could we have a show here? So originally it was going to be, since my studio is in the Warehouse District, I was going to go up there and show my work. It would be the first time of a big show, and I was going to show my work because I wasn't going to be afraid anymore. And I looked in that space, I thought, oh man, this is so much opportunity to create more community and expand this energy out. So we enlisted the help of artists, and I say help because there were 10 artists in the first show, and we all went in there. We pushed those golf carts out there. We cleaned that place up. We cleaned all the windows, and we put in the toilets, and we put in the bars and lighting and walls. A magnificent process. So if I'm the first show, we worked unbelievable number of hours to put this show together, and I had no idea of the success that it would become. I was working one day, and again, I will exhaust myself, but I was working there almost feeling hopeless, and what have I done? And suddenly some flowers came into the gallery, and somebody sent some flowers and said, good luck. And I went, oh, it's going to be okay. That night, 600 people came up the steps to go to the gallery, first show. So it's been a fantastic process.
Interesting. It was just waiting for a door to open, and you opened it.
That's right. You know, continually, you know, looking around, identifying the resources that are available to you and using those resources wisely to the highest and best use is something that's the creative lifestyle. And, you know, to say now I'm an artist or anything like it's a creative lifestyle that brings all these things together, you know, but Heidi's going to be one of the great benefits of doing this show for so long is running into people like Heidi. You know, she's going to be a presenting artist now in this 10th show. And I think 175 artists have presented there over the last 10 years. And I made some lifelong friends there. So I appreciate Heidi's work so much. And I'm looking forward to having her up in the walls.
Excellent. And Heidi, welcome. I first met you when I went up to Maquoketa to look at another show. And you happened to have, I think, 3 or 4 pieces there, these large heads, these charcoal heads. And they just knocked me out. And I found out who you were and brought you down. And here you are. And then this last January, you won first prize at the Augustana show. That's very cool. That's just what a feather in your cap that is. Marvelous stuff. How did you get involved with this Voices?
Well, thank you for having me again, and it's a privilege to be asked to come here, and it was an honor to be asked to be a part of the Voices show. And one day in the dead of winter, I got an email, and I hadn't gotten many emails, haven't for a while, just because I've been working in my studio kind of in isolation for a really long time. And then just out of the blue, I get this email from Sam Mulgrew, who I'd never heard of, who said I'm part of Voices and wanted to come see your work. And because I'd been working, and I don't even know why he called me, what brought that about, but I had him down, and because I'd been working for a good year and a half, I had lots of work to show him, and it's very different from my former working practice, which would have been do art, send it off, there's nothing ever in the studio, but now my working process has changed so much so that I have lots of work, and it's so interesting to watch a dialogue emerge in the work where you do one piece which informs the next piece, which informs the next piece, and then you have 10 pieces, and they tell a story, and then you think, let's see what these 10 pieces say to the next piece that I'm going to do, and from there, so on and so forth. And so when he came, it was an exhilarating studio visit, and probably I almost broke down crying to finally talk to someone about this, like, solitary existence I'd been having with my work, this solo dialogue, and then having someone come in and say, let me validate this or talk about this. And within a week, they met with the team and invited me to come to show the work, and the best part about it was that I had a chance to do a project, not do anything for any reason other than what I want to do exactly. And by this time, my ideas had refined to a point where the narrative was very clear of exactly what I knew I wanted to do. I had so many photos. I'd been taking my 35mm black and white photos then for a year and a half. I'd compiled all this information, and I just was so ready. And so now I'll be able to show just these giant works that are just exactly what I want to show right at this moment, not catering to any particular notion of anything other than what I want to talk about right now.
Nice, nice. You work in series then?
This is a little bit. It's more like not questioning any going with whatever I want to do at that moment. And if it emerges into a series, that's fine. but one work informs the next, which informs the next, and it just creates a unit. And then you stand back and you're like, oh, this then makes sense as you look at it then as its whole. So the pieces that I'll be showing, there's a story there and I can see it. And it's just all the fruits of the process of working.
Nice. You said a narrative became clear. What do you mean?
I think it is. You'll have to see the show. Pictures that have dual meanings, exploring the film medium through the portraits, you know, exploring portraits that are only possible through film and seeing what emerges out of that versus the digital, which I talked to you, I think, in depth last time about my abandonment of digital media and just seeing what does a show look like when I focus solely on these film photos and that real tightly honed method of photography. Seeing what does a group of work look like when I harness that?
There was a friend of mine who had a show of heads, smaller heads, and when he walked into the room, when I walked into the room, all of them were like talking to each other. They were all communicating. And years ago in Amsterdam, I walked into a room of Van Gogh portraits, self-portraits. And there was so much noise and so much dissonance that I had to leave in just a few minutes. It was just so loud in there, all of these portraits just talking to each other.
It can have that effect, probably. It's been a long time since I've shown my work in the environment, which I will be doing. It's going to be four portraits, two of which are three people in each, and then two solo portraits. And each of them are uniquely different and it's just fun to go with, and I'm sure that you could testify to this, the joy of just moving with where your creative motivations take you,
yes.
Going with that.
Yes.
And it's exhilarating.
Uh-huh. It is, and you have no idea where it's going. It's pleasant. It's a surprise. It's a little bit frightening, but it's also very delicious.
It's important because you have to enjoy your practice of working.
True.
And the thrill of discovery, the thrill of working out problems within the drawings, it's a thrill. And I'm sure that Gene would testify to the importance of the process of finding your way through the act of creation.
I think that's well put, Heidi. And so many things that you said resonate with me so deeply. One of them is the word isolation and how much time we find spending in our studio when sometimes the mind drifts off and is outside and going, I could be doing this, I should be doing that. But it is a lonely job. It's a lonely process. And enjoying that process, you know, you have to keep your spirits up sometimes. Sometimes it's just darn hard work.
It is hard. But then the reward comes. You have to find reward in small things. And I think I hear diversity in your practice of your life. And I've been more diverse in my life. And I think it's made me happier. Not just art, other things. Like I water the plants downtown to wit. And I get to nurture every little plant. And it's very joyful to bring that, you know, interact with the townspeople and talk about the plans. And so I think diversifying, and I'm renovating a home, like things like that make it so much less about you and your work. I found it's been very important to go outside my work and bring bigger things into my life.
You have to go outside of yourself.
Absolutely, because if you don't live outside yourself, you can't bring the world into your work. So you have to go out and kind of draw in and then, you know, you log those long, hard days and it is very hard. And there are moments where you don't want to keep going. You question the value of it. But then sometimes you have those moments in the studio where everything comes together and you stand back and you look and you see the value in what you are doing. But it's not only, life is not about that. It's about bigger things than that too.
I hear you. Getting outside of the studio and looking around is essential in cleansing and making space for new energy.
Absolutely.
To come in. Looking at your medium versus my medium, which is welders and cutters, and when things come together, sometimes things are like I said, difficult, but they are. I mean, you're grinding so hard on metal and burning that stuff, and you have no idea what it's going to look like when it's done until it's just that thing in your head and trying to manifest that thing in your head, get it out there. sometimes I just push myself to any limits to be able to get to that end point. But it's commitment. It's
just, and do you always succeed, or don't you find a lot of failure is hard to push through? And I've failed a lot, but then finding your way through the failure is so gratifying, because then you're like, okay, this is why I failed. It's because I was supposed to come over and do this now.
Right.
You know.
I've got a studio full of failure, and people walk in there and go like, wow, this stuff's really great. And I'm like, well, you know, it's all kind of awful.
But you know what happens then? It's that you, as the viewer, is looking at it. You're making it as a creator. It's not quite working. But if you step out as someone else is, the viewer looking at it, they love it, or they think it's terrific. Or later on, after you've turned it away from the wall a little bit and you look at it again, you go, that's really not so bad. I kind of like that. I have not thrown away a piece in 30 years, and I've not burned a piece in 40 years, and I haven't, and there's no piece coming through that I haven't at least had some contact with. We all have our favorites, but I don't think the failure is such a huge thing. It's like, well, you know, not every pitch is going to be across the plate, and not every.
I'm getting more accepting of the breadth and the breadth of the body of work.
Uh-huh.
I'm much more there where you just spoke about, of looking back at work from 8 years ago or 5 years ago and understanding where I was mentally then and saying, this is who I was then. I did the best I could, and it has everything to do with who I am right now. And it's a flow toward today. And so it's vital. And I'm less resentful and angry about former work or work that I deemed a failure. I'm much more understanding that that's the best I could have done at that moment.
Why would you be angry about former work?
Because it failed, in my view.
And it's just a step. It's just that's.
But I'm able to see it that way now. That's only been in the last couple, maybe 6 months, that I've been able to take that perspective. Okay. But it took time.
Sure.
Like, you're there. You get it. Like, I'm trying to get it. And maybe you get it, Gene.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because your work is so good.
Heidi, something that you said earlier about the narrative, and you're talking about it again, as comparing the conversation between the failure and what you now perceive as being success, or more forward motion, or a broader awareness, or what have you. But that narrative is it's the story of our lives. It's the story of an artist's progression and moving forward and seeing this. I have two pieces that I'm working on right now that have a very serious conversation going on between them. It's a very, very serious, and it's deep heart conversation. And to be able to articulate something that like that in an artist statement will not be possible. But if you give me some time and I trust you enough, I'll tell you what the deep, deep thoughts are there.
I would like to know those. Meanwhile, there is a fabulous show going on at the Voices of the Warehouse. In what building is it?
This is in the Wilmack Property Company, and it's on the corner of 10th and Jackson in Dubuque, Iowa.
10th and Jackson. So you drive into Dubuque, say you're coming from the Quad Cities, you just go straight in on
Highway 61.
61.
Roll right up there, yeah, and get off on White Street, proceed north a few blocks, and you're right in the warehouse district.
You don't cross the river then?
Nope.
You just come down, you go by all those buildings.
That's right.
And
so, the opening of the show is September 6th, and doors open at 7 o'clock, and then we're going to push through until whenever.
That's Saturday, September 6th. That's next week, coming up.
Yeah, that's coming up very, very quickly here.
And
this is the 10th year. The Big X, the Make Your Mark, is what the whole thing is about. We put a lot of themes in it, so I think you'll have a great time.
Excellent. We're speaking with Heidi Draley McFall and Gene Tully. Let's take a short break right now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area, in the Canage Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through September 5th, the 10th annual Canage exhibition. This year's theme, Home. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. At the Figge Art Museum on West 2nd Street in Davenport through September 7th, Innovators and Legends, Generations in Textiles and Fiber. Also through September 7th, Local Threads. Through September 14th, from pencil to printed page, Arthur Geisert's Thunderstorm. Through November 2nd, Two Americans in Paris, Stuart Davis and Grant Wood. And through April, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursdays. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of September, drawings by Ann Kaufman and mixed media works by Isaias Mejia. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5 on Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of August, photography by Heidi Brandt and acrylics by Leanne Westcott. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in Davenport, through the end of August, Oils by Stuart Roddy. Hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 11 to 6. At Quad City Arts Gallery at 1715 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through August 29th, Hang 10, acrylic paintings by Jacqueline Garlock and sculpture by Dean Kugler. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Saturday 11 to 5. At Quad City Arts at the airport in the Moline International Airport through the end of August, paintings by Roy Kasich and wood carvings by Bill Wolford. At the Quad City Botanical Center on 4th Avenue in Rock Island, through the end of August, paintings by Laura Goldman Weinberg and David Gregory. Hours are Monday through Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday from noon to 5. At Roz Talks at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence, works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 to 1 a.m., Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine, through the end of August, wood carvings by Norman Bunn. Through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Thursday evenings from 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque. Through September 1st, Edward S. Curtis and Thomas Moran. The Grant Wood Gallery, also on continuing exhibit. Hours are Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10 to 5, Thursdays 10 to 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays 1 to 4. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
And we're back on Art Talks. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Gene Tully, who's a sculptor and the founder of the Voices from the Warehouse, the wonderful show that they have, their 10th year in Dubuque, starting in September 6th, going into about a month, October 4th, next Saturday it starts. And also speaking with Heidi Draley McFall, a wonderful artist drawer who just recently won first prize at the Augustana show. It's like, wow. What a kick that must have been. That's terrific. I was talking to you and you were like, so hi. It's like, so are you in the show? You went, well, actually I am. And you pointed to your picture in the brochure. It was like, wow, you won. Oh, cool. So speaking of Voices from the Warehouse, by the way, why did you name it Voices from the Warehouse? Because you're artists, your pictures from the Warehouse.
Well, that's a good question, Bruce. It could be perceived as misleading if we were looking at it in a kind of not a very broad perspective. The voice to me is using your resources, your art, to be able to change the world. And I know artists have a very loud voice, and in their medium of people coming and seeing and hearing and experiencing that work, that is the voice. That is how we can change the world. You know, I wish I had a voice that could say stop the war. I wish I had a voice that say stop talking about people, or I had a voice that says let's stop rioting and love one another. But I have a voice that says here's my message in my work. This is what I want you to have. This is what I'm going to beautify the world with and help me work through my own angst of the lack of change in the world. That's what Voices from the Warehouse, it's standing up. It's making your mark and doing your thing. And everybody has a responsibility to do that thing, to be creative, to create beauty, to create friendship. And that's what it is. That's what Make Your Mark is. Voices 10, Make Your Mark, everybody. Artists aren't clowns. They're not entertainers. They're essential aspect of our society that really can enact change. That's I think I take that responsibility seriously, and everybody that has been in the show, fellow artists, feel the same. And because they're working, they're not trying to make a pretty picture for a wall. They're making something that's going to speak from their heart.
Sweet. If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Nice, nice. So how did you find your own voice?
Boy, Bruce, that was a long journey, and it's like Heidi was saying before, the narrative, the conversation that you can see in your work as it progresses. I was a latent artist for a long time. I didn't even know it. I didn't really start even producing work until I was 45 or 46 years old, and I would not let people call me an artist then.
What were you doing before that?
I was doing carpentry work, putting on different shows, bike races, ski races, and things like that. And I really started moving into art by making awards for the races that me and my friend Tim McNamara and were putting on. So we started making awards, being like, this is art. I'm like, hey, it's craft, you know, let it go.
Hmm.
But, you know, Heidi, how do you feel about the word artist? I think to me, the word artist in itself, I think to me, it feels restrictive.
Confining.
Yeah. I'd rather be looked at upon as being a free expressionist.
I think every human is a creative being. And to label a person as an artist, oh, you're an artist, or therefore you're nuts or whatever. I just feel that every person is somehow crafting their lives through their daily life in some way, whether it's the job they choose or the association they keep or the friends that they make or the cooking that they do or the vacations they take, the things they pursue. They're crafting their life in that way. And I think an artist goes deep, very deep into this well, mining this thing, and it's a choice. And I'm sure you feel the same way. That's a process of going. But the danger is going, you know, you don't want to go so deep within yourself that it becomes all about you all the time, because that's a very unhealthy place to be. And so that's why I talked about earlier about diversity. But if you're going to go there with yourself and with your life, do it with as much noble intention as you can, I think. And so I've been going there now, you know, for like 2 years, you know, deep into that place again.
You're speaking like an artist. I think being an artist is completely unique. If you say you're an artist, I don't think that means you're a flake or goofy or something like that. I think that's a very noble thing to say. I mean, you're a poet, you know, you're a writer, you're an artist. A lot of people hesitate ever, well, you did, to call yourself an artist, but you walk, you think, you talk like a duck. You must be a duck.
Well, I'm a duck, Bruce. That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a free expressionist, I think offers people the latitude not to have to be trained or not to have to have 10,000 hours into a craft to be able to call themselves an expert on it.
A master.
Artist is available. Just like a musician, my child sitting down in the corner strumming on a guitar is a musician, or, you know, yeah, that's lovely. Sounds great to me. I think our labels are restrictive.
When do you become an artist then? I mean, are you only talking about the Turners and the Constables and the Sargents and the Picassos? Are they artists?
I believe so.
High level of accomplishment to be an artist?
I think you put your best into it, and there's a element of art in any of that. I want to say that maybe it's fear. Maybe it's just fear that I don't like to be really referred to as an artist. Maybe I find this little side road as being a free expressionist a safe place to be, because it was fear that kept me from expressing myself artistically, and that's why I got into it late. When you expose that in element of your psyche to the outside world, you can't take it back. It's like putting it out on the internet.
Especially in sculpture.
Absolutely. And Heidi, you know, your work is just listening to you speak about the genesis of your work and where you've been. It's like being in a counseling session. You just learn so much about people and appreciate them.
Well, how did you find your voice, your style?
I was probably 13 or four, six. You know, I remember being in school at 6 years old, and I remember drawing this bird, and I thought, this looks like a bird. I think this is a pretty good looking bird. And from there, I just, like, art class was my favorite class. And then went into it, like, at 13 years old, started copying the Vogue magazines. And then from there, started getting really serious, 16, 17, 18. I think with my dad, I was probably 16 when I went out with him and shot my first roll of black and white film. He shot the pictures and I orchestrated it. And you could see the idea formulating was always these heads, these people doing things. And then when I turned 23, I started again with the rolls of film. And then it was always about activity in these pictures, life, or just straight on portraits. And then I got sidetracked by the digital. And that was a very dangerous trap for me because it took the spontaneity and the work out of the process in that too much information and the digital pictorial information, the life of it is not the same as film. It's just a fact.
You want to edit?
There's too much ability for editing. There's too much ability for photoshopping. There's too many. There's much more faith. Photographing in film is a leap of faith that requires so much careful attention that you have to commune with your subjects very intimately, and you can't just wastefully take 36 shots. You know, it means something, and you have to be very thoughtful. And so when I started that process again about two or three years ago, immediately the results were different, you know, versus the digital. The results were immediately more poignant, more saturated. The photos just were deeper and more resonant. And it was just, you know, how many drawings can I possibly make, you know? And then one photo session went to the next, and, you know, it just became bigger and better. And then in the last 6 months, continuing with these photo sessions has given birth to new drawings that just aren't, that keep me wanting to keep working.
Nice. So your images are of heads with a palm tree or...
That was the past work. The new work is all pastel, all portraits of groups of people or single people, discussing this idea of film. I'm really thinking some of the work that I'll be showing in Dubuque is discussing film, the anomalies that exist in film, such as strange occurrences. One of the pictures, her head's like shaved the top off because the roll of film hadn't advanced far enough, and it created a happenstance moment that was only possible due to film. And so I'm trying to very directly address my interest in film through this work.
Hmm. What surface are you working on?
All pastel, these giant papers, these thick papers that I'm working on, and amending my process with additional pastels that have just enhanced the process and made it more vibrant. And the working process is so invigorating as you go through each picture and solve a problem. Each picture is never exactly what you think it's going to be. You're just fixing this problem and finding your way through. And, yeah.
Nice. What kind of pastels do you use?
The Rembrandt, the Sennelier. It's this mixture of what can you get the right thing. And and I've been using this dry pigment, but I think I might need to stop using it because I think it's toxic.
Dry pigment down first?
It's a dry pigment, white titanium. But it's changed the work a lot. So the thing that interests me the most is the jumping off point with the film. What kind of crazy thing can you get to happen when you thoughtfully do these rolls of film? And then from there, making these drawings based upon these film photos just creates, for me, my voice, which was my voice when I was 16. That's what I was doing. And it feels so good to go back there. I know it seems like entropy of going backward, maybe, but I find going backward is the best way for me to go forward. It was absolutely vital, and I don't discount maybe doing film or digital again one day, or maybe getting an iPhone and seeing what can you do, but for right now, this is exactly where I need to be.
Nice, well said. Yeah, you sometimes advance by limiting yourself.
And it's this act of faith, the limits that are created through this process of film, where there's very few chances and there's no margin for error. And that is where the life comes from for the work, I think.
No margin for error?
With digital, you could take 1,000 pictures.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And, you get very few chances. And in that risk comes the effort. You have to push yourself to really make sure each picture counts.
Nicely said, yeah. So, Gene, going back to you, how did you find your voice again? We started off with you. But have you changed? Has your style progressed?
Oh, man. Yeah, a lot. It's, you know, it used to be little crafty trees and trophies and, you know, wall sitters. And I started filling up my house. It's like a gallery in there. And it's a bunch of heavy work. So I thought, well, you know, I've got this size of fishbowl. Well, I'm going to grow to be this big of fish. So now I'm the sculpture I'll be showing at Voices is 5,000 pounds, contains a couple of crushed cars and a lot of I-beam. And so that's a pretty big fishbowl that we have to work with there in the gallery.
Pretty free.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one, that's, you know, that piece is cool. The other piece that I've got in the show is what we were talking about earlier and about digging down and expressing to the fullest extent. The piece that I have in this show is going to be the most expressive piece that I've made to date, and that is just by daring to do, you know, to expose and to be grateful and to realize. And that's actually the name of the piece, is The Realize. The Flaming Lips song, Realize, has got a lot to do with it. I could just play that all the time working on this piece.
What are you grateful for?
Oh, Bruce, I've got a lot to be grateful for. I just became a grandfather 2 weeks ago, and
congratulations!
And I'm so happy for my family, my three daughters, and my wife. They're just, you know, so, Bruce, I am a supported artist. I have people who help me facilitate my dreams, and I am eternally grateful to them. The Voices team. My family, all the people around the neighborhood, they're coming, yeah, well, you need something, you need a forklift, you need some scaffolding, yeah, sure, yeah, let's do this thing. People come down, they're sweeping floors, I'm grateful. You know, I mean, hey, you know, working in the studio, you know, like before, like we were talking about isolation, I find that my headspace, what I'm thinking about, is translated into that work. And it's translated directly. And that energy is going to be clean and pure. If I'm making a gift for somebody, if I'm making a piece for a display, it's going to have my truth of my energy into it. Not a false thing. I can't instill it with this stuff. You know, it's going to be the best I got. And you know, I Heidi and I were talking on the way down here about artist statements and how difficult they are to write. The day after the opening of the show, and there'll be 17 artists there. Well, there are 17 artists presented. Not all of them will be able to make it for the artist walkabout. But you'll hear Heidi speak so eloquently again on the Sunday after the opening of the show. So that's September 6th. Writing a statement and putting it on the wall is oftentimes filled with a bunch of flowers and hyperbole. But when somebody stands in front of their work, it's for an artist is deeply touching. Deeply touching to stand there and to have people take the time to listen, to appreciate and delve deeper into your expression is a gift. I'd say come to that. Come to that walkabout and listen to these wonderful people like Heidi that are going to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. What are you doing? You know, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sunday, September 7th, 1 o'clock on, artists walkabout in Dubuque.
Right.
All the artists will be there. Marvelous stuff. Marvelous stuff. We're talking to Gene Tully and Heidi Draley McFall about Voices from the Warehouse, September 6th, this next Saturday to October 4th. Time for another break. Let's take one now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area. In the Canage Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through September 5th, the 10th annual Canage exhibition. This year's theme, Home. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Saturday. at the Figge Art Museum on West 2nd Street in Davenport through September 7th, Innovators and Legends, Generations in Textiles and Fiber. Also through September 7th, Local Threads. Through September 14th, From Pencil to Printed Page, Arthur Geisert's Thunderstorm. Through November 2nd, Two Americans in Paris, Stuart Davis and Grant Wood. And through April, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursdays. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of September, drawings by Ann Kaufman and mixed media works by Isaias Mejia. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5 on Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of August, photography by Heidi Brandt and acrylics by Leanne Westcott. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in Davenport through the end of August, Oils by Stuart Roddy. Hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 11 to 6. At Quad City Arts Gallery at 1715 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through August 29th, Hang 10, acrylic paintings by Jacqueline Garlock and sculpture by Dean Kugler. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Saturday 11 to 5. At Quad City Arts at the airport in the Moline International Airport through the end of August, paintings by Roy Kasich and wood carvings by Bill Wolford. At the Quad City Botanical Center on 4th Avenue in Rock Island, through the end of August, paintings by Laura Goldman Weinberg and David Gregory. Hours are Monday through Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday from noon to 5. At Roz Talks at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence, works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 to 1 a.m., Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine, through the end of August, wood carvings by Norman Bunn. Through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Thursday evenings from 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque, through September 1st, Edward S. Curtis and Thomas Moran. The Grant Wood Gallery, also on continuing exhibit. Hours are Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10 to 5, Thursdays 10 to 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays 1 to 4. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Back on Art Talks. If you've just joined us, Jean Tully and Heidi Draley McFall are with us. Jean is a sculptor and Heidi is a drawer, painter, and drawer, pastel artist. And they're going to be at Voices from the Warehouse, the 10th year in Dubuque, right downtown on 10th and Jackson. Just go right into town on Highway 61. Don't cross the river. This program and many, many previous programs going back about 2 years are available on our website, wvik.org. Click on the schedule button at the top of the page and scroll on down to Art Talks. Click on that, and they will appear by date, names of the artists, and a brief description of what they do. We'll probably call you guys creative expressionists or something. No, we're not. We're going to call you sculptor and pastel artist.
Okay.
You got otherwise, you know, multimedia artists. Who knows what that is? We were talking about finding your voice, speaking of voices, and we were talking about writing artist statements, which are difficult for many artists to do because they're perhaps not familiar with words as much as they should be. And how do you tell your audience or your dealer or your gallerist, how do you tell them what you're trying to do? What do you say? And you spoke earlier, Jean, about the meaning of your work, and during the break you were talking about how you want to uplift the world, or how you, and that's an age-old desire of art and humanity. And Jewish culture has a phrase, tiklum something, which is you want to save the world. You want to make art, you want to make hospitals, all those kind of things. It goes back forever. So you are a cheerleader for humanity. And Heidi, you are perhaps less a cheerleader for humanity.
I believe what I'm doing is trying to in some way soothe myself, work through grief, through the work, and then perhaps individual people that see the work can perhaps be soothed and comforted as well.
By the smoothness of
No, not in any way. I feel that the work now is potentially more gracious and benevolent in trying to reach out and maybe tell you that you're not alone or that I'm with you here. Like the one that I did of my father, you know, he died in 2012. And, you know, working through that grief was difficult. The diagnosis of Parkinson's was difficult to live with, you know, for 13 years. And so when after he died, it was finally time to do this picture that I had taken in 2001. So the portrait that emerged was not one of despair and sadness. It was a portrait of life and hope and humor. And so I feel that even though what we face is tragic and difficult, I feel that the human spirit does want to transcend that. It's just in our nature to rise above the grief. We have these moments of grief. And one of the pictures that's in the show is definitely a portrait about survival. But she's just reflective and accepting and gonna make it. And so any person that's struggling, I think, will see the picture and maybe be empowered in that moment to keep going. And so I don't think I'm cynical. I think I am hopeful and believing.
Titles. How
that
do you
it can
title?
Make a difference.
Excellent. How do you title your work?
The names of the people most of the time.
Is that enough of a hint?
I feel that if I have to take away what you can take away from it. And I, again, with like artist bios, artist statements, it's like, you know, okay, next. It's like, does the work stand up? Let's look at the work, you know, and I don't know very many dealers that get hooked by art throughout a statement. I would think it would not happen generally because the work is the thing that's telling the story. And none of my words can tell the story. Either the work works or it doesn't work.
I think they give the bio and I think they give the statement to the person who's considering buying the piece.
Potentially. It's a way of explaining the work, and yes, it has merit and value, but at the end of the day, the thing that is telling the story is the physical work.
But every person sees a work differently.
They do, and I'm always dismayed at that because I have this idea very locked in of exactly what it means.
Really?
And then someone will come along, but sometimes people get it exactly right. I had emailed this friend of mine, and he emailed me back, and he said, it looks like the pieces, they're caught between pain and hope, and that's exactly where I was at that moment. I couldn't believe he could just hit straight down bullseye. These particular works, he could see it, read it. Probably people see it. Often people do see exactly what you're doing. It's pretty transparent. The work can be pretty transparent. But then sometimes you have these grandiose ideas and it just falls flat. People don't see it that way. But that's fine. That's the beautiful thing about art is that each person brings their own set of circumstances and life history to the work and thus their own interpretation. So...
Good, good. And now your work is, you're seeking to soothe the world?
I think, no, I wouldn't. I if that happens, that's wonderful. I'm soothing myself through the process of working.
Through your art.
And it's not always soothing. Sometimes I want to cry and I hate this. Why am I doing this to myself? But then sometimes I do feel soothed and my grief feels lessened. And if I can soothe someone and lessen their grief, then I would have succeeded with the work, potentially.
Good, good, good. And Jean, what is your work? What does your work mean? What are you telling us?
You know, I chose metal for my medium because it's formidable. It carries a pretty heavy message. So a lot of my work is laden with message. That's perhaps why I like the opportunity to talk about it. Because I'm listening to Heidi here and thinking, you know, is my work like that? And yes, that work should stand on its own. But to have the privilege of associating with the person that made that and hear it and listen to the stories that are in it, amplify that mm-hmm. understanding then. And that person goes away with perhaps a piece and says, I now connect with this more than my own interpretation, maybe more than just the beauty that's on that surface, that there's something behind that, and there certainly is so much back there. There's so much deepness there. So the my work this time is, like I said, it's bigger. And
beauty?
And the adage is, when you make it big, you own it. And so in the second floor of the warehouse above the gallery, I've got big rocks and sculptures and stuff. And I just like put it up there and I'll do something with it later. And so definitely going to own a couple of crushed cars. Unless you want to buy them, Bruce. Mm. No, you're not in the market. Mm. Oh, yeah, that hurt. I like the message. Well, you know, here, I'll tell you. Then, when you're driving to Dubuque and go to the Warehouse District and you're coming up White Street, my studio is on the corner between 8th and 9th off of White. And if you look up on top of that building, there's an old water tower standard from the old Caradco complex down there. And there's only four concrete columns that go all the way up through. And they just happen to come up from my work table all the way through the top of the building to where the water tower was. And up there, I put four grotesques. They're not particularly gargoyles. People call them gargoyles, and I let them get away with it. Gargoyle is a gargle. It's a structural element, beautified, but it takes water away. A grotesque are these images that see and control energy. So these four grotesques up there are tasked with overseeing low energy, the low energy of hatred, greed, violence, and addiction. So this is the message that people like, when they see this, they don't know it. But when they talk to me, I'm going like, yes, now you know that when you look up there and you can reflect into your own life, how do these energies manifest themselves in me? Hatred, greed, violence, and addiction. You know, how can I better the world by recognizing that these things exist in all human beings, than that they are ours to be able to either abuse or just subside and let them be. I know you're there. I know you're there, but I'm not going to pull you out. So look up and see them on the way into the show.
Nice. Is this part of your life? Where do these guys come from?
They're
ancient.
The grotesques.
Hatred, greed, violence, addiction.
Oh no, those just came up in my head. You know, is that your question was? No, I don't know.
That people grab
well,
with.
You know what? I had just gotten back from associating in Indonesia with some Hindus, and they kind of inspired this because they would take out these beautiful offerings with incense and freshly cut flowers and put them out in the street, and they were for the low energy gods, the ones that the not good ones. Then the good, but that's the way of saying, we recognize you're here and we know you're here. And then they'd take the other ones for the wonderful gods and make bigger flowers over here on the wall. But the ones that were on the street, they got run over, they got walked upon, you know, but still, it was just that awareness that those bad things do exist, but we have to realize they're there.
You're like a clearinghouse of hope and emotion and energy. It's like it's passing through you.
Oh, thank you. That's very, very, thank you. I'm touched.
And that's a very, you're almost like up at this tower holding a thunderbolt in your hand, and you're invisibly changing the course of the world.
We're doing what we can, Bruce. Step up, make your mark, and do the best. And you know, oftentimes we don't have the privilege of a broad audience, but we can make our mark on the person that's right next to us right now.
You know, there's a famous painting by a Turner who did this ship after a storm, and there's like this fabulous color and this three-masted sailing ship, and the colors are gorgeous, and it just sucks you right in. And then when you get closer, you see these little figures in the water, upside-down figures and fish, and you see blood, and then you look at the title, and it's called The Slave Ship, and you go, oh my God. And what can one artist do? 10 years later, slavery was abolished in England. Did that painting have any effect? It must have affected somebody who had some power who saw it. it must have reinforced somebody's feelings about something. And I think what art is doing, especially the way our conversation has gone, that art can really affect a lot of people, can really move a lot of people, can soothe, can uplift, can change people's minds. I think music can do that. Art can do that. Literature can do that. I think the arts are very, very important. I think being an artist is one of the most noble professions, I think, in the world.
How about being a free expressionist? That's noble too, right?
I'm not sold on free expressionists. Okay. Keep hitting me on that. Oh, gosh. Wow, our time is rapidly diminishing. We have 2 minutes left. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's going to be going on.
Okay.
And so you drive north from Davenport on Highway 61. You go into Dubuque, down that long hill, that lovely drive, your ears pop. And then when you get into the bottom of Dubuque, you keep on going, and you go to 10th and Jackson?
That's correct. Yep. You're going...
Is that a long way in, or is it
a
short way
not,
in?
Oh, no, not so far.
Okay, it'll be on
the riverside, and you'll see the big red warehouse buildings as you drive up White Street there.
And then just park anywhere, and you can go in.
Yeah.
And you're starting Saturday at 7 o'clock till midnight. You're going on with the opening reception. And then Sunday, there's a walkabout where you can go and you can talk to all the different artists that are going to be standing in front of their stuff. And then you have some jams, you have some music that is going on all in September, a lot of collaborations, some theater, an art gallery tour on October 3rd, and then you finish up on the 4th. It'll be a fine time. Is there a website that people can go to?
Yes, you'd want to check out voicesgallery.org.
Voices Gallery.
Right. And I'd like to point out Michael Perry, author, is going to come in on September 27th. That's really exciting. He's a super humorist and fun.
Excellent. Time for the last question. Heidi, what advice do you have for young artists?
To keep working, just to keep working and figure it out like that.
Good.
I'd say young artists, get out there and check out those galleries. We put these things on for your enjoyment, and you will be inspired, and you'll meet the most beautiful people around.
Excellent, excellent. Words well spoken. Well, that's it for us today on Art Talks. The Voices from the Warehouse coming up next Saturday for a month. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. As always, I'm Bruce Carter. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.